Hello and welcome to the Decrypting Crypto podcast. It's March 14th, 2024, and this is Off-Chain, your weekly recap of the biggest stories in the crypto space. I'm Matthew House Barbie, and as always, I'm here with Austin Knight. How are you doing, Austin?
I'm a 91 out of 100, which is to say, if you look at the fear and greed index right now, it's at a 91. So I might as well be there as well, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, we're recording today and Bitcoin has dipped to a mere 71,500. That is not something I thought that last year that I would be saying on March 14th, 2024. So it's pretty amazing. I can't remember who tweeted this out, but when we broke through 73,000, which I think was like 2 days ago, maybe even yesterday, I can't even remember now. It's all blurring into one. But this is very obvious when you say it, but like just hearing it out loud was like, you know, at that exact moment, every single person that's ever bought Bitcoin ever is in profit. It's just a wonderful,
amazing,
a wonderful thing to picture. And, you know, I mean, even last year, I think during the middle of last year, when we were talking about Bitcoin, I think something like half of the Bitcoin supply that was held by individuals was like underwater, right? Like they were in the red. So what a comeback for Bitcoin. And, you know, ETH has been on an absolute tear as well. We're going to talk a little bit about ETH today, as well as a few other areas, but lots to be super positive about. And I mean, we've both been a little bit tied up. We missed a couple of weeks of recording, and it feels like in that time period, I mean, I think we've jumped from around the 50s, the 50K marks of Bitcoin up to now, and we're in the 70s. So yeah, I think our price predictions are going to get blown out of the water real quick.
We're 2.5 months into the year, and my price prediction of 70K has already been squashed.
Nailed it. So,
yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm glad to be wrong. Like 70. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, that's the sacrifice that we're all grateful for, Austin. I think mine was like 74, so I am hanging in on a thread, and I cannot wait to be proved wrong. So, yeah. All right, let's dive into our first story of the day. The much-anticipated Ethereum Denken upgrade went live yesterday, 1:55 p.m. UTC time. And with it, we saw the implementation of EIP 4844, which you may know as Protodank sharding. We talked a little bit about this back in February on a podcast, and we had a pretty seamless kind of rollout of the upgrade. And so why are we talking about this? Why is this important? Well, with Protodank sharding, this introduced the concept of blobs, something that you've probably seen via several memes on Twitter, which have been very enjoyable to see. Blobs are important because, you know, they pretty dramatically expand the amount of data that each Ethereum block can hold. So by around 10x. So on a Protodank sharding now, we're able to carry closer to 1 megabyte of data in each block, which is up from what was previously anywhere between 50 to 100 kilobytes. And why this is important is much more focused on the layer two kind of rollups. The reason why data availability fees are so high is and why they make up something like 90% of all of the fees that layer two rollups like Optimism, Starknet, ZK Sync, Arbitrum, etc., all pay for is because there's such a limited amount of space. So they're having to post so many more times onto the Ethereum layer one. This is really, really important. And since the rollout of the Denken upgrade, we have seen an enormous reduction in gas fees on layer two rollups by the order of like around 90% reduction in places. So Optimism, is probably showing right now as the cheapest. It's under a penny for a transaction. It's like 0.001 or in and around the like penny to 0.001 mark for sending ETH, swapping tokens, which is pretty incredible. I mean, on the upper end of the scale, I think Starknet was one of the more quote unquote expensive at this point, and you're talking about 6 cents for a transaction to be posted. So this is like pretty amazing for end users. I think though, what I think is very important. So there's a couple of things here. So what you'll also see is across a load of different layer twos. I think right now we have somewhere in the region of 45, 50 different layer two rollups that exist on the post to Ethereum right now. A number of them still have fees, like for example, Arbitrum, at the time of recording at least, fees for like swapping a token that's close to $1. And for sending ETH is like 30 cents. The reason for this is that while Ethereum Duncan upgrade has gone through and Protodank sharding is live, each of these layer two blockchains still need to make some updates of their own just to kind of support this. So I imagine over the next week, all of these layer twos will dramatically come down in cost. This is great for end users, and I think it's just like one step towards these fees coming down even more. Where I actually think this is so much more important is it's just becoming significantly cheaper for layer twos to operate. And that's going to mean that, you know, we should see this huge explosion in innovation as it becomes cheaper to build and scale networks within the Ethereum ecosystem. So this is a real net good. And I think if you listen to the podcast episode we did on Feb 8, you'll know this is kind of the first step towards full dank sharding, which, you know, this would further increase block capacity up from like around 1 megabyte now to up to like 16 megabytes. We are a little way away from this. There are other milestones along the way between there where for proto-dank sharding, there's further updates that will come that will further drive down fees. But, you know, this update is probably the biggest step forward in scalability since the merge. And all of this is happening while, you know, modular blockchain scaling is accelerating in the background. And that aims to actually take a whole different approach and actually manage data availability outside of the Ethereum layer one. And that's what things like Celestia, EigenDA, and others are attempting. And if you're kind of scratching your head thinking, you know, what the hell is data availability? This isn't data storage per se, like long-term data storage. This is just what the rollups will use for somewhat of like temporary data storage that's used to actually post transaction information up onto the layer one. It's pretty critical, but it's always been and still is the largest chunk of like the fees that are paid, but making some great progress in driving that down. So a net good. But in typical crypto fashion, ETH had like a little bit of a sell-off today. You know, you add utility, Austin, make things better, price go down. Turns out we should just not do anything and make things worse, and price might go up. I think that's the solution to all of this.
Yeah, it is bizarre how that always happens, but of course, you know, we see the bounce backs time and time again. So
yeah, I'm bearish on utility here. It's probably the reason why we're seeing an absolute frenzy in the meme coin world, which we'll cover a little later. But why don't we shift from the scaling of Ethereum to the scaling of a single company that has been pretty much like synonymous with the world of Bitcoin. So let's dive into our next story of the day.
MicroStrategy now has over 200,000 Bitcoins coming in at a valuation of over $15 billion. If you haven't heard of MicroStrategy or Michael Saylor, you've been living under a rock. I think it's safe to say that Sailor has brought his company along for the full roller coaster ride that our volatile crypto market has been on over the course of the last few years. And it's really just been amazing to see how they've gone from, you know, Sailor really in particular has gone from hero to zero back to hero again so many times. You know, one day he's an absolute genius pulling in huge numbers like what we're seeing right now with this Bitcoin valuation, holdings valuation at over $15 billion to, you know, seemingly weeks, months later, you'll be hearing about the call for a vote of no confidence and for him to be removed from his post as CEO because he continues buying Bitcoin even when it's way, way down. In fact, he's been known to ramp things up when it's down at times, which is, you know, proven now to be yet again a shrewd thing to do.
The only explanation I have of this, of Michael Saylor and how he manages to ride both of these different waves, is that he is either severely mentally ill or he is actually just a straight up lizard person from another planet. And I'm not going to write off that he could be in the middle of that Venn diagram, but it's, you just gotta, you know, like, the English dictionary has just got his face next to conviction. It's just outrageous. You just got to respect it.
The level of conviction is incredible. I would put him in the middle of that Venn diagram. I would give that one a 4K no los dos. You know, he's you have to be both. You know, there has to be a bit of genius and a bit of insanity, right?
Yeah.
To pull something like this off, and you know, maybe also a bit of psychopathy, who knows. What's interesting about this is that on Monday, Michael Saylor announced that MicroStrategy had just purchased another 12,000 bitcoins for close to $822 million, quote, using proceeds from convertible notes and excess cash. This is after they raised $782 million in a debt sale for the purpose of acquiring additional Bitcoin. And I believe that came out of last week. They offered $600 million in convertible senior notes due in 2030 to buy up Bitcoin. So the number just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
He's such a legend.
I mean,
it is just an absolutely legendary move, isn't it? You just, I can't even imagine some of the board conversations he's been in over the years. Like, it's incredible. You love to see it.
I mean, it has to be absolute chaos. How do you go from like last week being like, you know, oh, we're gonna like raise $600 million, and then it's like, oh, actually, that turned into a $782 million debt sale, and then it's like, oh, by the way, we bought $822 million of Bitcoin. Like, what are these conversations like? Then how about this, Matt? Yesterday, they announced a further offering of $500 million in convertible senior notes due in 2031. Surprise, surprise, to buy up more Bitcoin.
That's amazing. It's amazing. And Saylor is just like such good value on the interviews he does as well. He's just like the most memeable man in the world. And I absolutely love the amount of like great podcast episodes I've heard over the various different cycles that Saylor has been on is just absolutely amazing. I just love it. And he's just like, you know, I think like whenever he gets asked the question of like, how are you going to sell? Like, when are you going to sell? And he's just like, I am never going to sell. It's just, I don't think you could become more of a maximalist if you tried.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's basically become the de facto Bitcoin spokesperson at this point. I mean, you add it all up, and MicroStrategy now holds roughly 205,000 Bitcoin. It's incredible.
That is eye-watering amounts.
Yeah, it actually makes MicroStrategy the top public holder of Bitcoin. And get this, the second largest is Galaxy Digital Holdings. They have a whopping 17,000 Bitcoin. Like, peanuts. It's not even close.
Rookie numbers.
Yeah. Tesla is them. Number four.
Wow.
You may recall Elon Musk did a $1.5 billion transaction to purchase Bitcoin for Tesla's treasury a little while back. That makes Tesla the number four largest public holder of Bitcoin in the world with 10,000 Bitcoin. It's just the gap is so huge.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then it put you fifth on the list, Austin?
Oh, Matt, I really love talking to you every week. I can't promise you I'd be talking to you if I were number five on that list. I think I'd be on Mars or something.
That's fair.
Yeah, but okay, so think about this. MicroStrategy has 205,000 Bitcoin. We noted that that is worth about $15 billion today, but they acquired all of that Bitcoin for a grand total of $6.91 billion. That means that the average price that they paid per Bitcoin was $33,706. That's incredible.
That's amazing. Do you think he has it all just in CoinGecko on his P&L? Just shows like 15 billion. The app just glitches out because there's so many zeros to show on the profit. Like, they have to have like a sale of you for it.
Do you think they bought all of those Bitcoins from those Bitcoin ATMs and gas stations?
I think so, yeah. I reckon that's the only logical way.
Yeah. Now, you know what's actually kind of... It kind of shocked me to really think about this, because it seems like MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor have been such a huge meme almost within the space for so long. I mean, they're fully integrated into the world of crypto. I can't remember a time where we weren't talking about them or they they weren't making some kind of news. But actually, it wasn't that long ago that MicroStrategy wasn't even involved in crypto. In fact, they began buying all of that Bitcoin in 2020 with an initial.
I think we actually refer to that. Million. I think we refer to that year as zero AD. Actually, that's I think when this really kicked off, and the second coming of Saylor arrived this year to just bring us back into the beauty of the bull market, and I am here for it. But yeah, it feels like way longer. I mean, Saylor has been doing this for a long time himself, right? And so it's felt like forever that MicroStrategy has as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to think that they've been able to acquire so much and to, at least as of right now, post such gains in such a short period of time. Because I think that, when you think about a company or an individual, posting huge gains in crypto, at least for me, I almost have a little bit of like a defeatist attitude, which I think is wrong, which is that like, if you weren't getting in like 2013, 14, 15, 16, you're kind of fighting an uphill battle there, right? But that's just because that's where your head goes to when you think about like the real low entry prices. Of course, I'm sure there are other people that think, oh no, if you weren't getting in at a dollar, then then you weren't really getting in. But I think that what this shows is it's never too late,
The best time to buy Bitcoin was probably when it was sub $1. The second best time is today. I think always every single cycle, especially in the bull, you always feel like you're too late. And I think that's that is the real challenge with trying to time stuff and figuring out. I feel like, the lesson that many people learn is if you have conviction and you're here for the long term, is just to not financial advice, just like dollar cost average into stuff, and you'll feel good about it afterwards.
It's a dollar cost average story almost at scale.
Yeah, 100%. And that gives them the leeway to probably have strong conviction in buying at like an all-time high, which they did in the last cycle a lot, right? Yeah. So here's a thought exercise that I always find funny to think about in MicroStrategy. What most people in crypto forget is that MicroStrategy literally does nothing to do with Bitcoin. It's core.
Yeah.
It's a public company in its own right. It's like a business intelligence company. Imagine working at MicroStrategy and just selling business intelligence and not being interested in Bitcoin. What a bizarre place it would be to work. I feel like everyone that spoke to you would want to ask you about the Bitcoin stuff. Like, it's just what a crazy place it would be to work.
Well, Matt, I will tell you, there is another company in that list of top 10 public holders of Bitcoin that I'm very familiar with.
I imagine.
Yes. It's interesting. I imagine, at least from my experience, having been through a similar thing, working for a company that isn't explicitly involved in Bitcoin, although I will say, it is much closer to the space than MicroStrategy is, but certainly is a huge holder of Bitcoin and has made some huge bets in that way. You get a lot of internal divide, and what it takes is strong conviction from leadership and a willingness to be accountable when things are down and when everybody's feeling the pain, you know, and that's not a fun position to be in. And I know that Sailor has been in that position many times over now as the company has gone through these cycles, but also imagine the position that he's in right now. Right. And this just continues to happen over and over again, where his conviction is proven to be correct. We said they began buying in 2020 with that initial commitment of $250 million at the time. MicroStrategy's market cap was $1.1 billion. Today, that company is worth $30 billion. All right. Now, it doesn't matter whether you care about Bitcoin or not. If you're just a business intelligence analyst working at MicroStrategy and your company 30x'd in value in the last few years, something's going right. You have to
admit
that.
Feels good. Feels pretty good, I imagine. Yep.
Yep. In fact, MicroStrategy has purchased close to 16,000 Bitcoin since the start of the year. 2.5 months in, 16,000 Bitcoins purchased. And, if you look at their stock, their shares are up 180% this year. And last year, their shares grew 346% in value. In fact, its stock is growing faster than the rate of growth of its Bitcoin holdings. And a Canaccord analysis showed that MicroStrategy's equity value premium over its Bitcoin holdings is somewhere in the neighborhood of 99%. There's a lot of different ways to interpret that. You could, on the one hand, say, ooh, are they being like overvalued? Is this a hype train? Definitely, there's probably part of that. On the other hand, you could say that maybe the market is pricing in the long-term plan and conviction that the company's leadership has.
Yeah, and I think that's the play here, right? Looking at their annual revenue is just under 500 million, right? That's not a lot of money. And you're probably looking, and that was a slight decline from 2022, ever so slight, right? So you look at that, maybe if you were like comparable with like an attractive multiple on top of that in business intelligence SaaS, maybe you're looking at like a $8 billion business if we're like kind of being generous here. Looking at it through that lens and then layering on the fact you've also got $15 billion worth of current market value of Bitcoin that's like, hard backing to the company. It's pretty attractive. I get it. And I think it's been interesting. Pre-ETFs, I feel like MicroStrategy and Coinbase were often used as like a proxy security that you could buy to get exposure to Bitcoin, really, without actually buying Bitcoin, which has been kind of interesting to see. But yeah, the MicroStrategy story, you feel like this is just going to be a story for the ages. Regardless of where this nets out, This is, mm-hmm. in its own right, even now today, a fascinating story of just complete conviction. Super cool. All right. Let's talk about the whole other end of the spectrum in our final story of the day. It wouldn't be a bull market if we weren't talking about meme coins. And let me tell you something. There are a lot of people talking about meme coins right now because they've been on an absolute tear. And the leader of the pack has been a cute little dog wearing a beanie hat. And that is dog with hat. And I try sometimes to make sense of the meme coin market, and I realize that I'm already approaching it incorrectly by trying to understand any kind of logic in amongst all of this. But with the meme coin represented by a dog with hat, it just hit a $3 billion market cap. That is just a casual 1,000% plus move since the start of the year. I owned a little bit of WIF back in November 2023, which I sold for a $90 loss in December. So follow me for more great trading advice. And that marked the end of me ever buying a meme coin ever again. I'm wonderful at round tripping this stuff. This is not where my strong suit is. But when the story is not that I am just a terrible degen, it's that you are going to most likely hear a lot more about this meme coin over the next coming kind of like weeks and months. Because outside of just attracting the attention of the crypto degen community, and even being mentioned a couple of times on Bloomberg, which I watched live, which was pretty hilarious, where I think that they said that Dog with Hat has captured the crypto zeitgeist, which, what a statement from Bloomberg. But in an attempt to kind of continue to build on this momentum, the community's been kind of trying to do like a bunch of these bigger PR stunts. And most recently, it had these grand plans to get the Las Vegas Sphere, which I'm sure everyone listening has probably heard of. If you haven't, Google it. It's freaking amazing. It plans to pay to just have a giant image of the dog with hat on the Las Vegas Sphere. So to do this, they believe that they needed around $650,000, I think it was. Well, they raised this in 4 days from donations from the community. And now they're going to put this, they're going to use this to put, the big dog up on the big sphere. So I am sure there is going to be a frenzy that kicks off around when this happens. Unfortunately for the rest of us, that's it. It is the top signal that we have been waiting for. The bull market is over. Sell everything, and I'll see you in 3 years for the next bull. Of course, that is not financial advice. And if I have at least given you a sense into my ability to predict the price of meme coins and otherwise, probably don't trust me on that front. But yeah, what do you think about this? Full of deep fundamentals here, Austin. Are you super bullish?
I do imagine that of the what did you say, like $650,000 that they're going to spend on this sphere placement. I'll bet that the market cap goes up in excess of that after they do this, because the amount of media attention that the Las Vegas Sphere pulls is incredible. And I mean, look at this, like it hasn't even happened yet and it's already being talked about. So the people that made those donations, I imagine most of them hold the coin itself and are expecting that they're probably going to get a return in excess of their donations. So in that respect, it seems like a bit of a smart investment almost. The Sphere itself, I don't know if you've seen it, Matt, but it really is a sight to behold, I'll tell you what.
I haven't seen it in person, but uh-huh. I've seen all the videos, but it looks unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
And I do absolutely love the idea of this just being plastered on
yeah.
the stair. And then it begs the real question here that I'm sure everyone here is thinking is, when will we have the WIF spot ETF? I'm sure BlackRock will be eyeing this up as the next big AUM driver for them. So, you know, stay tuned for that. You heard it here first, WIF ETF in the works. I'm sure, no doubt, Larry Fink will be, after he's finished listening to this episode, onto his minions to get that happening. So with that, we'll bring this episode to a close. We've got a lot of exciting time, and it just shows that actually maybe Ethereum shouldn't focus on blockchain scalability, and instead maybe all we just need is Vitalik with hat on a Las Vegas sphere to take us all to Michael Saylor territory of wealth. All right, Austin, it's been a pleasure, and I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Matt.
The contents of the Decrypting Crypto podcast should not be used and are not intended as investment advice. Please do your own due diligence before making any investment, cryptocurrency or otherwise.